Blog Talk Radio.
Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
Welcome to this week's episode of Don't Give Up Radio. You know, I'm really thinking very strongly about changing the name to Don't Give Up and Win, because while I don't want you to give up, I definitely want you to get to a place of winning. That's where God wants us all to be. And so this show is designed for those of you who have a dream, who have a purpose that you're reaching for, that you're trying to get to, but at the same time, real life challenges are in your way, and you have to push those aside in order to get to where you need to go. I was reminded today that the greatest amongst us that you see, that you look at in magazines and books and television, on the radio, what have you, trust me when I tell you, they got there from pushing away many hard, hard challenges. So when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about these things.
'Tis so sweet to trust in Jesus, just to take Him at His word, just to rest upon His promise, just to know the same.
Jackie Wayans.
Inspiration through word and song for you.
We have with us tonight a pianist and composer and songwriter. He is really born in the Toronto area, so I'm glad he was able to get through and share some time with us today. He's also a business entrepreneur. But Corey Livingstone is not here for any of those reasons today, tonight. He is here because of the book that he penned regarding the very interesting relationship that he had with his father growing up and the peace that he came to within himself through that relationship and what he calls quiet determination. Corey, welcome to the show.
Nice to be here, Becky. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem at all. I love the title of the book, Quiet Determination. It's a true story about a relationship between a father and a son. And I want you to go into the past with me for a moment here and just explain what your family dynamic was when you were growing up. You know, how many siblings, what was your upbringing like? Just give us a little picture of that.
Well, I come from, in the day, was a large family. That was five children and two adults. That's a big family for up here in Canada. I know down in the States it may be a bit larger, but for up here, five was a lot. And my mother even herself came from a large family of eight brothers and sisters. So there's my two brothers. Well, it was one family at the beginning, just the three boys. My older brother and me in the middle, my younger brother. And then, 12 years later or so, my sisters came along and called. My mother shouted, "Hallelujah, Jesus, thank you for that, I tell you." She had not one girl, but two girls in a row, bang, bang. So the original, the original family, just the three boys with my mother. Her and I bonded naturally, and I didn't even know. Like, you grow up and it's normal for you, right? You and your mother, or you and some other person, you click on all cylinders. So my mother was a housewife, but not she had her own life as far as being a member of the community. She founded up here in Canada the National Black Coalition of Women. She was on the board of the YWCA here in Canada. She was worked for the United Nations up here in Canada as a volunteer. So my mother was a pillar of the community. She was also an actress, and she was also was a secretary for my dad in the start of his business. My dad was a good provider. We learned our P's and Q's and things. But my dad, because his background, he was very authoritarian. He ended up physical punishment at the drop of a hat. So, and that was due to his upbringing, according to my mom. So, we had a well provided. My dad was a successful businessman in the construction industry. But my dad, I never did like my dad because he was to me a brute. I got the belt. I got welts across my backside. I've got cuts. After beatings with the belt. But, my younger brother got it even worse, And my older brother, he didn't get it so much. I guess the older ones got off lucky. But anyways, maybe because I was oversensitive. But anyways, I really did not care for my dad as I grew up. And as I grew up, I actually came to hate him.
All right. Well, many of us can understand that. I definitely, my mom, being with a Caribbean or West Indian background, was very authoritative herself. So I definitely can understand what it's like to kind of get a spanking every day for what you think would be like no real reason at all. So I get it. And I get the kind of animosity that can build up in a young person. Did you have anything to offset that? Was there God consciousness in your home when you were growing up?
We went to church every Sunday, but it was, my dad sent us to church. When he was young, he had to go to church home. His mother apparently wanted him to become a minister. So he made sure we went to church, and we used to go off there every Sunday morning. When I was older, with my group of teenagers and my peers, I ended up going to United Church for the youth group every Sunday evening, around 5, 6 o'clock. We'd have the youth group. So I did that for a number of years. And, we used to have weekends outings, excursions for the groups, 15, 16, 17, 18, things like that. So, that was sort of like on my own, away from my family, because that was that was my upbringing. We got, you know, like, we got a solid, you know, Sunday school. We got a solid, you know, solid training in the scriptures and verses and whatnot up to my to my teenage years.
Yeah, and I can understand what it is to be sent as well to Sunday school, but it's great even in those moments because the root takes hold inside of you. But, you know, just going back, your mom being such a pillar of the community, you know, very busy, very multitasking then, and your dad being a hard worker as well, but yet you have this memory of him in the beginning years of being this strong authoritarian person you mentioned, but in today's standards, knowing what you know now, would you consider or perceive that relationship to be what is categorized as abuse today?
It would be hands down abuse. I could show anytime you have welts across the back of your legs, or if you have, and not all those welts, but they're bloody welts, I think that accounts for abuse, hands down. And we used to get, you know, puffs right across the head, bang out, you know, quicker than a rattlesnake. And those were demeaning to me, you know. And I made a promise to myself, when I become a father, my kids are not getting any cuffs outside the head, and they're not going to get this belt, you know. I have two sons and two daughters and one son. My son, I can say I gave him the belt. You know how many times? Three in his life. And every time I gave, and it wasn't to the severity that I got. I mean, they were good whaps, you know, but not, you know. And every time after, I sit with him and I said, son, you know, this hurts me more, much more than it hurts you. My dad gave me a beating of wham, bam. In fact, my dad even used to tell me to shut up. Here you got a grown man. You got a grown man wailing on a 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old, and he's telling you to shut up. Okay? Because he beat you. You know?
Right.
So I made my notes.
Yeah.
And like I say, and it hurt me. It hurt me to give my son. And I know the three times. I can tell you exactly the three times because he was way out of line, way out of line. One of those happened was his conduct at school. So, you know, that was probably his first one.
You know, I think there is definitely a misunderstanding in our society today. Definitely abuse is never to be condoned by any means whatsoever. But one of the things you're saying that you did with your son, which I also have two girls and a boy, and what I did with my kids was I would sit down beforehand and make it clear as to what the problem was, where they went wrong. You know, the fact that we had gone over this before and they were aware that there was going to be a consequence, and that this is not coming from a place of anger, but it's coming from a place of preventing me from going down a road of danger, right? And
yeah,
that you would be able to develop some self-discipline so that you know, don't go down that road. And then after, like you said, coming back with the confirmation, coming back with the support and the love. And I think my kids, my daughters always used to tease my son because they would say, he would just run into my arms and hug and kiss me. And that is the way we are actually supposed to be with the Lord, because the scripture says that he chastised those who he loves. Those times when he's gently warned us and we keep going astray, he then has to come in and chastise us because he
That's
loves
right.
us.
That's right. I
he
told you what was going to happen. And you thought I was fooling. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he wants us to run into his arms, not run further away. And that's one of the beauties. And so, you know, that's how we, you know, when we have these circumstances that are in our life, and at the time when you were young like that, you think to yourself, how am I going to live through this? But God has a way, and you shall live. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about how those bitter years formed you and how you're able to get released from that.
Don't Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans.
Inspiration through word and song for you.
And we're back with author Corey Livingstone as he's sharing with us about his childhood. Very, very accomplished mom and a hardworking dad who provided for the family, but was really, really hard on the boys, especially Corey. And, you know, we define that as being abusive in terms of what he experienced. And so, Corey, the brutality meted out in the name of parenting, right? It built a wall of bitterness and hate and animosity in you, I'm sure, as you start to grow into your preteens and so on. How did this manifest in you as you went into your preteen and teen years?
Well, you know, unbeknownst to myself, right, all this stuff makes you all that much tougher, all that much stronger, all that much more determined. to when you set a goal, you're going to go through. Like, for instance, there was one time when my dad was going to, I was going to get the belt. And you know, Jackie, I was so angry. You know, I mean, I was spitting angry. I said to myself, you're not going to get one peep out of me. Okay, I was determined. I had made up, that's my goal. Okay, I had my mindset. See, everything's about mindset. I said, you are not going to get one peep. He whacked me, and I squirmed like a worm on a hook, but I didn't let out one single peep, and I looked him square in the eye after every lash. You know, that gave me so much power, and it showed me, you know, when you set your mind to things, no matter what, you know, you're going to come out the other side successful. So apply that to your life, right? You have a goal to achieve. You're going to be, a lot of things are going to be in your way. You're going to say, oh, gee, that wall's too high. Oh, that river's too wide. That mountain's too high. So I'm not going to do it? No. In spite of the difficulties, in spite of the challenges that are in front of you, I learned how to go right through. And so that's the training I got, didn't even know I was getting, is building my mindset, okay? I didn't go the other way. You know, I could have gone the other way and said, oh, gee, poor me, and, you know, against me, and I might as well jump off a bridge, and I'm lousy and no good, right? No, didn't happen, okay? I looked at my inside strength. This is, you know, the strengths and the power that God had given me, and I didn't even realize it, but I worked on them just surely by accident, by the way my character was. You know, I didn't read a book. I didn't have a psychologist degree. I didn't go speak to the pastor. That was all from within, but it came from as a result of what I was going through.
That is very interesting. You know, you mentioned the two ways that it can go. The third way that I can think of is, you know, becoming an angry teen or an adult outside of the home, that you, you know, a lot of times kids take on the very behavior that they hate themselves and it becomes a part of them. But you're saying that that was not something that happened to you. Instead, you built a determination within yourself to be the opposite.
Yes, and you know why? I think because I had the balance of my mother. My mother used to give me a whack, don't get me wrong, right? But there was a love. I could sense the love. With my dad, it was like you had to go through a military court-martial and then, you know, the judge and jury. It was very cold. So having that balance, right, I think this is what kept me. If they were both like that, then I may have gone the other way. But I had that balance in my mother's side. My mother could do no wrong, put it that way, no matter what. So I think that balance is what kept me going the way I chose as opposed to falling back the other way.
So now I think it's great that you had this determination that, you know, that was building inside of you not to rebel but to be better.
Yes.
However, I know that still took a toll on your relationship with your father. And I would like to know, even after you became an adult, did you have an estranged or distressed relationship with him?
I never let my guard down. You know, as I got older, whenever, you know, you're living on your own, living with your own family, but I would meet with my dad. You know, maybe at Christmas time we'd have dinner or Thanksgiving, whatnot. And every time I met, I made it a point to, in a laughing way, to talk. Remember when you did this and you did that? It was some negative thing he'd done. I made a joke about it, right? But what I was really doing was turning the screws and saying, look what you did. Are you proud of yourself? So I sort of, it was still that animosity was there, you know, but I made a joke of it and I brought it up. So I was starting to get my own back. But, you know, so that's what I did. And I tried to forgive, right? But I really couldn't. I still had this it was probably latent anger now, but it wasn't until he died. Okay.
Yeah, so let's talk about that, because you said your relationship came to a crossroads, but you say that the price to be paid was your father's death. So explain that for us.
Exactly. When he died, the rest of the family, my sisters and brothers, said, they nominated me to do the eulogy, okay? I guess maybe I was probably the more energetic one or the whatever one. But anyways, they put that mantle on me. So I sat down, Jackie, and I said, well, gee, I got to think, you know, this is going to be tough. I got to figure something nice to say, right? Because yeah, that's what you do the eulogy. So I wrote down, I just started talking about my dad, okay, what he did for us. Like, I always appreciate that he gave us, I lacked nothing physically in this world from my dad. I said, well, he gave us a good house. I started reminiscing. I remember my dad carrying my older brother out of the house, down the steps, wrapped in a blanket. And with such care, and I didn't know what was going on. My brother had his appendix burst. My dad had him cradled up in a blanket, putting him into the car to drive him to the hospital. I remember that. Then I talked about him driving me to my hockey games, driving my other older younger brother to his football games. And then I talked about him, how he rented us, made us a cottage, built a cottage for us, and how he bought us a boat. So I looked at all the physical things and that he was doing, and I said, holy cow, he really did love us. He really did love me. I realized he could not say, and I never heard in my life, okay, I love you, from his lips. He never, but he showed it. But I didn't see it. I just saw the bat and the head and the strap across the backside, okay? I saw anger. I saw vindictiveness. I saw a meanie. I saw a brute. I didn't see this loving man who worked hard to give us physical, because he grew up, again, like he's from the Caribbean. He grew up, and he told us his house was he had a tin roof on his. He had a tin shack. He gave us all the things he never had physically. He was showing us his love. I do love you, but I was not mature enough to understand that. And it wasn't till then. It changed. Like it wasn't a penny that dropped. It was like an anvil that dropped. Bang. He really did love me.
It was doing your dad's eulogy that actually awakened you to the things about him that was loving. And, you know, when we use the term in our society, abuser, right, everyone gets up in arms and, you know, you want to criminalize them, and I do understand that, absolutely. What we're talking about here, though, with first-generation parents, what you're talking about is not, sorry, I said that wrong, with first-generation children, as we are, that is not uncommon, right? First-generation children are expected to live under the old country standards in a new country world. And a lot of the things that we say and do that is perfectly acceptable in the world that we're living in is not acceptable from the world that they came from. And so you're constantly butting heads. And this is true whether you're from a West Indian background or Puerto Rican, Dominican, African, it's crossed the boundaries, Asian. It's just something about that first-generation child. They have to be the one to, you know, to hold that ground and to straddle the fences between the two doors of the past and the future. It's a very difficult and demanding place to be because those parents are doing what they know to do, and they are seeking to do it out of love. They are seeking to do it to make us stronger and better. And it has been up to us to find our place of love and forgiveness towards them. And God always provides that open door. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the book and how you intend to help others through this process with the book.
Resisting all the changes that days and years can bring. When God decides to lead you through an open door, inviting you to walk in realms you've never known before. Thank you.
Don't Give Up Radio Show with Jackie Wayans.
Inspiration through word and song for you.
And we're back with Corey Livingstone, and he has a book called Quiet Determination. This book was based on his experiences with his own father growing up and lessons learned a bit too late. Once his father had passed away and he was eulogizing him, he started to recount all the ways he was an excellent father. And I can tell you sometimes, you know, it's not until you get into your 40s or you become a parent yourself and you realize how hard it is that you start to develop an appreciation for some of the things you had no tolerance for when you were growing up in your teen years, your early 20s, or even your 30s. So here you are. Was there any closure process that you did for yourself since your father had already moved on to kind of come to grips with the fact of that you began to understand that your father really did love you? Did you have to go through some type of, you know, writing a letter to your dad or something like that?
You know what? I wrote a song. I actually had closure. I mean, the spark went right away when I realized, but then I wrote a song, and the name of the song is called The Wall, and the theme of the song is that the wall basically starts off, and I picture, like, he was lying in my arms. This is the state. This is kind of a general run of the song. He's lying in my arms, and we're sitting under a tree, and we're talking about, he didn't know how to say I love you, and I didn't know how to recognize what he was doing was love, and that we were taking down this wall one brick at a time. That song was actually my closure. And that's the actual physical thing that did it, the song that I wrote. And
that's beautiful. In the course of just discussing with you, I forgot that you were this musician and composer, and so it is great that you were able to bring your music in for healing. And we do know a lot of artists, whether they're comedians or musicians, what have you, they really turn to those things as a source, as an outlet for the pain and a way to soothe that inner child and heal in that area, and I understand that. Your book, Quiet Determination, Unlocking the Gates to Unlimited Success. Tell us about the book, who you wrote it for, and what are the type of points that you're bringing across?
Well, because my dad was able to provide so many things for us, I've lived a blessed life. You know, I have to say that, Jackie. I'm not rich. I'm not famous, okay? And I'm not poor on the other hand, right? And I'm not complete. I don't live in complete anonymity. But I have truly been blessed. And it came, and I have to say that it's what I learned in my family life, and a lot of it had to do with music. The lessons I learned, taking the music lessons that my parents told me, that I didn't get up and say, oh, hey, I want to play the piano. It was exact opposite. I didn't want to. Okay, I was forced to. Okay. The lessons that I learned being better in music and being successful in music, they are transferable. The same skills, the same mindset that I had, that I learned taking lessons, I transfer unconsciously to my life in general. So I could sum up my book saying success in music, success in life. Instance, point in case. I mentioned earlier that I didn't really want to play the piano. My mother said, you're playing the piano. Well, I really didn't know one way or the other until I found out I had to practice. every day at the same time and for 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the way it came. My mother, this is how smart she was, okay? She told my dad, I want the boys to take piano lessons, right? So he arranged for it. She, at 5 o'clock, I had to practice. Why? Because that's when she started making the family dinner in the kitchen. The kitchen was just around the corner from the living room where the piano was. So she could make dinner and supervise my practice. So I had to be there at 5 o'clock. I had to practice for 30 minutes. She was there. Every 5 minutes, I'm calling out, you know, an 8-year-old, is the half hour up yet? No. No, not yet. So what did she make me do? She made me accountable. Sustained accountable. I had to be responsible. I had to do this every single day, Monday to Friday, whether I liked her or not. And you think, she was teaching me accountability, and I didn't even know it. So you think being accountable is important in my life? It certainly is. So I learned how to be accountable, okay? I learned how to get things done. I don't have to wait. I won't wait for a better day, right? I'm doing it now. So this is a life lesson. This is what I learned, one of the lessons that I learned, just from lessons, from studying music, okay? I take that another step forward. As I'm growing up, as you grow up, in a way, we get busier and busier, don't we? Especially when you get to high school. You know, I'm going to high school. Every year you get older, there's more stuff to do. Like, you got to go to school, you got to study, you got to have your lunch, you got to spend time with your friends. You have a part-time job. You've got to practice your piano. I'm playing in a rock band. I do sports. I've got all these things to do. So how could I possibly get them all done? I schedule them. And today, if you do not schedule your time, you will not be successful. You can have, you will often hear, oh, I've got so many things that I don't know where to start. Well, you know where you start? You schedule your time. Okay, I can do this, I can do this, I can do that. And then you know what you find out, Jackie? I've got too many things to do. The less important things will have to wait until I get the more important things done. So you learn how to put things, rank things in an order of importance. Those are things you have to do. The things that will get you through to your immediate goal, your most important goal, that's what you do. The other things, I'm sorry, they have to go by the wayside. You have to have that to be successful. I don't care if you're a CEO or if you're a janitor. Okay? You have to have things prioritized and scheduled to be successful in life. That's another point in case. And I learned that having to do so many things in my life. I had to schedule. You know, how many times have you heard people say, especially athletes, after they win the championship or they win that, oh, and I thank God for my success, okay? You know, God has made each one of us perfect. He's given us all the tools that we need to be successful. Why? Because he wants us to be successful, but he will not do the work for us. That's why he gives us choice, right? We all have choice. That's the greatest, probably, gift that God has given us. He's given us the choice. You know, he says do this and do that, but he says, I'm not going to make you do it. You have to choose to do it. And so if you've chosen to use your gifts, that's why I say I'm blessed. I have found out so many gifts. If you exploit your gifts to the fullest, you will be successful. So what you're doing is, you know, God has already made you successful. You are thanking God by being successful. Okay? That's how you thank God. You thank him by using the tools that he gave you, because he made you to be successful. Now, granted, there's degrees of success, right? I mean, I certainly couldn't run 100 in my youth. I couldn't do a 100-yard dash and keep up with Usain Bolt. No way, okay? But I might be 2 seconds behind him, right? But I'm still successful. I'm still a fast runner. Okay? I didn't win the match, but when we're talking about human things, when you look at, you know, you see Olympics, people winning by 0.0011 of a second. I mean, that's ridiculous, right? For all intents and purposes, you're the same speed, right? But because we have to have, this is man's side, right? We have to have, ooh, there must be a first place, there must be a second place, okay? And we're going to get our atomic microscopes out, and we're going to make sure. But, you know, that's just a subjective thing. But in God's eyes, you are just as successful as the next person, okay? Once you use all the talents that he gave you to the fullest, okay? So that's one thing I'm talking about. Using your talents, all of the talents, because God gave them to you. You know, we all have one thing that we do better than everybody else. One thing, okay? There could be 100 things on the list, or 1,000 things, or 2,000 things, but you will far exceed or excel everybody in that. You can't be better than everybody at everything. Impossible. Hussein Bolt, he's a world champion of 100-meter dash. But where else is he great at than a world champion? Only that one thing. But he's happy enough because he has that one thing, and that gets him through. So that's why I say you don't thank God, like literally thank you, God, for this. You have to thank God by doing. That's his thanks, okay? He already gave you. He already prepared you. He prepared you to do it. He gave you everything you need. Your thanks is by not letting him down.
I think those are some really great kind of parting words of encouragement as our time closes on the radio show, because it is true. Of course, we give God thanks in all things. There's nothing wrong with that. But I love this point that you understand that moment, God already knew it was going to occur, right? And,
yeah.
And perfect practice is what allows you to show up in the moment and be excellent. And so in that time, it's also a thanksgiving of giving thanks that you were able to glorify God, and you give him thanks for that as well, because you had to show up. Faith and works go together.
Thank you for what you've given me the ability to do, you know. That's exactly right.
For those of you who are listening, you know I say it every week, Romans 10, 9 and 10, that that's where the relationship begins, that if you can confess the Lord Jesus Christ with your mouth and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, that you will be saved. And upon that, you have a new communication and wonderful relationship through his Spirit to be able to hear him and figure out your gifts and your talents and your ability and to pursue them. And it has designed you to win. And we need to have that mindset. You know, for those who really get it, they expect to win at everything. They really do. Now they
can't win at everything. How many billions of people?
Right, but I'm talking about the expectation, because a lot of times most of us don't have the expectation. We are just going through the motions without the desire to achieve anything, right? So I'm talking about going into things with the expectation. People on the Olympic team don't go through years and years of rigor and training and competition to get to the Olympics and think to themselves, well, at least I'm here. You know, no, each one of them is thinking, I want either gold, silver, or bronze. They're there for a reason. They're there to attain something. And I think sometimes we're really a little too lackluster in what we're trying to attain. We don't set it as a goal and try to set up the target, like you mentioned, with this quiet determination to really figure out, okay, what's the process? What's the plan? How are we getting there? It's not just magic. And I've been guilty of it myself. And you know exactly what you speak of after being the director of the Toronto High School of Performing Arts, and you had students like Cree Summer, which we know from A Different World, and Keanu Reeves, who's internationally known worldwide. So you understand what it takes to put faith and works together. So I appreciate you sharing with us. Our time is gone. Can you let people know where they can get a hold of the book, where they can find your music, your services?
Yeah, you can get the book on Amazon.com, of course, in the analog old-fashioned paper, or you can get it a Kindle edition. And for listeners of your show, I'm just in the process now of making an audio version of the book. Should be ready in a few months, but listeners of your show, if they write to me actually go to my website, CoreyLivingstone.com, and just write to me, and I'll send you a free audio copy of that book when it comes out. So it's very easy. Just type in K-O-R-Y, Livingstone, just like it. Just type that into the computer, and you'll find me, and you'll get my email address. It's the same thing, Corey at CoreyLivingstone.com, and I'll send you a free copy when I get it made, audio copy of that book. If you want an autographed copy of the book, write me, and I'll autograph and send you a copy directly from me, as opposed from everything comes from Amazon. It's just, you know, there's nothing in the cover. It's just blank type of thing. So that's where they can get a hold of me anytime they like.
That is very gracious of you. Thank you so much. You've heard that, listeners. You have a free gift waiting for you. If you take advantage of the moment, all you have to do is shoot out an email. So don't let that one fall to the wayside. I thank you so much for being our guest. We had a lot of challenges making this connect between the two worlds, but we finally did it.
Well, like your show says, don't give up. That's it. We didn't give up. There were challenges, and we saw it through. And right to the bitter end, I must tell your friends, because tell the listeners, and we had challenges right to about a minute before the show, but we did.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. And so, listeners, take that to heart. Sometimes good things do happen. You just have to keep your nose to the grind and keep pursuing. And with God on your side, you will get there. You will get
You'll
there.
You'll get there. It's over the next hill. It's around the next corner.
That's right. Keep pursuing. So for those of you who are listening, you know what I always say, go ahead and be your own best hero, because the greatest hero of all said that you were worth it when he gave his life for you on the cross. Until next time, be blessed.
He was driven by his dreams. God spoke to him, told him that he'd chosen him. When others didn't understand, Joseph still believed and trusted him, trusted and was willing to. When the world just didn't believe, God had promised never to leave him alone.
Dream on.
Dream
on.
Follow hope wherever it leads, for in the seed of dreams there's a promise of the dawn.
So high that you can't climb with.